As much as I like to fight everyone, I'm having a pretty good time here. Why you mad? Why you mad? Why you mad? Why you mad?
Hey, howdy, Lisa.
Hi, Jake. How you doing?
I said that because we're going to talk about Texas.
Yeah, man. I mean, let's jump right into Texas because, man, wow, so much happened in Texas this week. I was going to start talking about myself.
One tragedy after the other.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I was like all set. I almost want to say like I wrote a few potential jokes about Austin. Like, I was all set to make my new thing. Let me turn off this law and order in the background. Oh, fuck. I left the remote. No, you're right, whatever.
It doesn't matter. It looks cool.
It's like the logo.
It looks badass.
I paused it like right when the fucking episode was starting.
On the Zoom call, it looks, if you're not paying attention, it looks like Luisa has a neon sign that is the law and order intro in her apartment.
But it's just a TV paused on the fucking intro. But anyway, I think like about a week ago, I don't know, time just doesn't fucking make sense anymore lately, but I think about a week ago, I was like all set to drop the jokes on tall people in favor of making my new 2021 bit jokes about Austin, right? Which came about because of the fucking cultural crisis is what I'm calling it that Austin has been going through, which is for like a long time because it's become like a tech bro city, is my understanding, right? And like the houseless people are not being helped by the government like since before, you know, like it's been getting bad, right? But comedy wise, I guess just really quickly, Rogan moved there, right? Famously because of the tax shelter situation or like the no income taxes.
Well, according to him, it's just because there's more freedom there.
Oh, right. But it's like because they don't have some kind of taxes. I think property.
Yeah, no, that's what he meant. It's just there's lower taxes on everything. Mm. Texas is it's my home state, right? I know way too much about it. It's a big.
That was my first conflict, was that I have a lot of fucking friends from Austin. And I was like, what the fuck? How did that happen? Yeah. But no, tell me your facts. I want to know.
Well, there's very low taxes on, I don't remember exactly what, there's some form of taxes we pay up here that they just don't have. Like, it's like this place that prides itself on this sort of like Ayn Randian, you know, independence, everything's personal responsibility, right? But you know how they fucking pay for everything? It's fucking cops everywhere. And it's just like,
oh, fines.
Yeah.
Fines for everything.
It's a fact of life that you just get like, you know, pulled over all the time and you just have to pay stuff. And it's like people joke about it. Like it's like, oh, ha, ha, ha. But it's like, that's also one of the things that, you know, when Black Lives Matter was first kind of popping off in like the 2015, when the smartphones first were showing people like, this is what it's like to be black and get pulled over by a cop or whatever. I mean, that's the reality. If you were not white and you live in like a place like Texas, everyone else just jokes like, oh, I'm going to get a speeding ticket or whatever. And if you're poor and you're fucking, you know, black or brown or whatever.
Fucks you up,
honestly, best example of this is fucking the song Riding Dirty. That's like a common term for driving with your shit not up to date. That means you'll go to jail if you get fucking pulled over, which you will all the time. Plus fucking sucks. And as we've seen with the grid going, well, I won't skip ahead to the grid.
through the migration. Well, I mean, okay. So I really was making jokes about Austin because of the migration of comedians specifically to Austin. But like, I have a real reason, you know, and I don't want to deviate because we have a lot to talk about in this episode, but fucking, you know, it's not just a matter of like comedians moving to a city. You know, when comedians move to New York or move to LA, it's like all different kinds of comics from different kinds of backgrounds and experiences and identities and everything moving from different places to two cities because there's infrastructure there basically for doing more stand-up and getting other things. But in this situation, it's like very specific type. Wait, so hold on. So like in the New York and LA situations, there is the like so-called headliner and professional level of comedy, right? In New York. But then because there's like all these younger and newer comics moving here and LA, there's this breeding ground for an alt scene, basically, right? So people, I think, because there's some people who are excited that Austin is going to become this like new mecca for comedy. And I really think that they imagine that it's going to be like New York or LA, where there'll be clubs that have regular, like, headliners, you know, and whatever. It'll go back to normal. And then there will also be all these alt shows for all these different kinds of comedians and opportunities and shit going on. When in reality, it's like, it's a very specific bunch of headliners who are moving there, or venues that are moving there, that are already moving there with connections that are not Austin connections. Like, some of them are, but the Austin connections aren't bigger names than the names that they're bringing from New York or LA or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So they're like importing a pre-made scene, and not even a whole scene, but like a specific slice of it, Jake. So if everything works the way we know, which is networks and rhizomes, which I know you're going to touch on later too, then it stands to reason that with Joe Rogan doing his podcast in Austin, more of the comics that are the types of comics that go on Joe Rogan will go to Austin to do Joe Rogan's show. So they will also get booked at the clubs and at whatever quote unquote alt shows and venues there are, right?
Yeah.
And then those people, whoever they're, if they're headliners, they're taking the club weekends. You understand me? If they're friends with the Creek, then they're doing the Creek, and the Creek will achieve its goal of being a headliner only fucking venue. And, you know, like, I think some people think it's going to be like, oh, open micers are going to get to hang out at the Creek. Like, it's like transplanting somehow what the Creek was in Queens versus what it's going to be in Austin, which is going to be like, it's going to come in to create a whole fucking other thing. And then think about the kinds of audiences that brings. And then fucking, it just becomes a very specific thing. Right?
You know what's funny? This is like, it's funny. There's all these open micers in Austin that like think that they're going to go on tour with Joe Rogan because he lives there now and shit. And it's like, why? Oh, the problem is he didn't know who you were because he didn't live in Austin. Yeah, no, that's probably it, yeah. Right? But
they're not going there to discover new people.
You know what this reminds me of? When Amazon was trying to move to New York and they fucking pushed it back, and Amazon's whole pitch was like, oh, we're going to bring all these jobs. And who the fuck was it? It was like AOC and, you know, all those other people or whatever kind of pointed out, like, you're just bringing people that already work for you here. Like, this doesn't do anything for us.
Yeah, exactly. And those people already have their connections. They already have their Austin connections, even. You know what I mean? Like, this is more of like reifying the previous order. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, like, for them, kudos on them. I think this is going to be profitable and probably work out very well for all the people who think that it's brave to do stand-up comedy during COVID. But it's going to like affect that city's stand-up comedy scene for many years to come, I think. So I jokingly was like, I think I'm going to make some fun of Austin because it's now going to become just like bro city, bro comedy city. And then fucking more shit happened to Austin. Oh my God, Jake. So now they're just like in a snowstorm and everybody's like without power and water and shit, right? And I've even had a few people be like, you know, jokingly tweet at me that this is all happening because of what I predicted, you know, because of like things going wrong because of these people all announcing they're going to Austin. And I was like, nah, I'm not. I'm taking a pause on making jokes. I have compassion. I understand that they're going through a structural / climate crisis, so I'm not going to poke them about their cultural crisis right now. But I don't know, how's your friends and family doing? Have you talked to people? What's the deal?
Yeah, my folks are like, they have a generator. They texted me a picture of it today. They're like using a backup generator because I haven't had power for, you know, a day or two. And I think they're not in too bad of a situation. I'm a little worried. Like, the roads are all iced down there, and like this, like, sea level problems. So there's no infrastructure in place for this sort of thing because there's not supposed to be fucking blizzards in Texas. So I'm a little worried, man. I mean, like, my brother's driving to work and shit out there because you still have to go to fucking work because Greg Abbott and Texas and America and all that shit on icy roads and stuff like that. So, no, I mean, I feel for them terribly. It's a fucking terrible situation, and it's all happening because I did a little reading into like the power grid stuff. I don't know if you know about that, but like
I read a little bit into it. But yeah, and I've seen how they're like already trying to, like, I've seen tweets from, I guess, conservatives being like, One was very funny. It was like, oh, Texans will protect the right to keep the feds out of our power, even if it means living a few days without power. And then it's just like a bunch of Texans like, fuck no, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah. So Greg Abbott has been tweeting about this a lot. He's the governor. He's he is in a wheelchair. It's like, come on, everyone in Austin, Texas makes fun of him because he's an asshole. Yeah. It's like Pence. Like, you make gay jokes about him. Yes, because he's an asshole and he's oppressing all of us. I was looking at his Twitter the other day and he was talking about how he proposed to his wife at River Center, which is where the worst comedy club in America is, that has the worst comedy condo, which you might have heard legend about on WTF. But anyway, this fucking asshole, he's been trying to blame it on the Green New Deal, this incredible failure of the power grid in Texas, which is a all out flat out lie. The real reason that the grid failed, which is what's causing all these rolling blackouts, is that Texas has this, you know, we don't get regulated fucking thing where the grid in Texas specifically not connected to the power grid in like other parts of the country. And this is basically to set up a situation where they don't create any surplus energy that doesn't go to being sold, so they don't lose any profit, and so you don't have any backup energy when the thing gets overloaded and all these fucking power outages happened. And you could see all these horrible photos where it's like, oh yeah, all the rich buildings and stuff in downtown are still lit up, but people's homes are fucked.
But on the other side of the highway, which is funny because when I went to Austin, I stayed at the Super 8. Mike, do you know where that is? On the other side of the fucking
on 35.
It's like by the barbecue place. What's it called? Franklin's?
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was funny because, like, you know, everybody stayed at the fancy hotels on the shiny side of the highway. And I would have to, like, walk at night across the highway to get to the fucking Super 8.
No, you stayed, I might be getting this wrong, but I want to say you stayed on the east side, which is historically, gentrification happens right down I-35. The east side of Austin used to be really bad side of Austin. I mean, it used to be the black and brown side. I had a professor in college talked about how there was graffiti on the fucking highway. It said when you walked over from downtown to East Austin, it would say, welcome to East Austin. You're exiting Austin. You're exiting the American dream and entering the lack of the American dream. It's this big symbolic fucking thing, right? Since then, fucking gentrification's happened, and so it's a whole other thing. So now it's all fucking condos and shit that have pushed out people that live in the neighborhood instead of just investing in the fucking neighborhood, right? Which is what, you know, all this shit is what we talk about all the time. It's that's we don't need business. We need public fucking works, right? Anyway, regardless of all that, I think personally that this happened because Dave Chappelle won't leave. I think that's why Winters reacted, because he fucking came out and he said, like, yeah, I had COVID. I'm dead over it. I'm going to do more comedy. And his response to everything was, I had fun. Like, that was, oh, okay, we had fun. So fuck you for saying I should have stayed home. You got other people sick. I forgot that happened in Austin, too. Yeah. He got a bartender fucking sick with COVID. Yeah. That person's fucked. They don't have Dave Chappelle money. Yeah, he's a fucking asshole.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm a terrible person. So despite all the bad messages that his little last drop had, I was mostly not pleased by, like, the lack of jokes. It was just like, man, did you notice that, like, in the middle of the thing, he just, like, had to throw a dig at pronouns, like, for nothing. Like, it was not related to anything.
No, I didn't watch it. Jesus Christ, every set.
You didn't watch it? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Every set. Oh, so it's, like, a short thing. It's, like, a 7-minute clip, I guess, from one of his live shows, right? And he put it on his Instagram. And it is, like, basically a man who had the good joke. Fuck. Somebody tweeted something funny. And it was, like, oh, 1998 stand-up comedians telling you, like, what is it? Oh, I'm a truth teller and whatever. And then 2021 comedians, I would like to tell you about a few CEOs I would like you to applaud. And, like, that's totally what that set was. It's basically him, so I'm conflicted because I guess he won his rights back for his name and for the show and got more money for Chappelle's show because he had complained before publicly. You remember that whole thing?
Yeah.
And so then this little fucking clip that he dropped was him saying to the audience, like, hey, we got our way, right? Thanks to you guys fucking for not watching the show and whatever, whatever. I got my way with Comedy Central. And so then the last one was all like how Netflix are the good kind of fucking CEOs. And then this one was like he named by name a fucking senior VP or whatever the fuck this dude is at Viacom.
That sucks. Okay.
Yeah, dude. And he, like, there's no laughs, right? At all. So it starts with, like, that Viacom shit. And, oh, no, it starts with the COVID thing. So it starts with, yeah, I had COVID. And, yeah, I know people are making fun of me and being like, see what happens, Dave? See what happens? Well, I hope you people enjoy it because I got better. And da, da, da. You know, and, like, yeah. Basically what you said, right? And then the transition phrase is, I want to swear to you, is he says something like, and, you know, you're all so worried about pronouns when we should be worried about important things. Transition to everybody thank this the Comedy Central CEO.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. What a fucking loser.
Yeah, dude. So it had, like, nothing to do with anything. He just fucking threw it out there. Like, why do you have to bring this up every time? I don't understand why you are so obsessed with pronouns and then you, like, project it onto everyone else.
It's so weird living in the future or whatever. Where, like, I, you know, there's this kind of constant sense of like, oh, we're in bizarro world or whatever. But Dave Chappelle was one of my favorite comedians. Now every time I see him, it's like he's trying to make me hate him, like, actively. It's crazy.
But dude, it is really, I don't know. I think a lot of maybe what we're going to talk about today is like the effect of people like siloing themselves with a particular type of people and feedback, and they like convince themselves they're in a different reality. I don't know how to explain it, Jake. I don't know. What are we jumping to next?
Okay, I have a whole kind of wad of connected bullshit. You know, rhizome, right?
Oh yeah, right. Right.
You were
having a Twitter dispute while I was following another Twitter dispute. Another Twitter drama.
What was yours?
Well, yeah, mine might be shorter, but oh, it's actually a throwback to one of the episodes that we did. So do you remember in June, back in the summer, early summer, we did an episode about the 8 white identities?
Yeah.
So that was a thing that I had run into in like scholarship about race and shit. And it was written, and it's like a framework that was basically developed by a professor of African American studies, of political science and sociology, right? He's a black man who's obviously educated. He has 3 degrees. Not that that's like a measure, but like, this isn't a tweet by like a bartender. You know what I mean? Like, this is a well thought out framework that like I brought it to discuss on this podcast, not as like some inflammatory fucking radical shit, but as like, or even as like law or rule, but as a framework through which we could consider the ways in which we all participate in white supremacy. Right.
Yeah.
And this is the intention that I think that this man wrote it with, and that he uses it in his classes. I think he's currently a professor at Northwestern. Right. And basically, the way that I became aware of this is that I follow him on Twitter. And this morning, he starts tweeting, like, he locked his account and he starts tweeting that he's getting all these, like, really racist hate mail. And he's like, I don't know what started it up again. And he's like, but suddenly, like, I'm having this hate mail. And he just starts tweeting out. He doesn't tweet out, like, screen grabs or anything, but he, like, quotes stuff out of the emails that he's getting from people. And they're basically really mad at this 8 white identities thing, right? And eventually, he and I, because I'm following along, right, we figure out that what had happened was that earlier this week, a white principal at a high school in New York City sent out a copy of the 8 white identities framework to all of the parents of the students in his school. Okay.
Okay.
So I don't know if I should start with the principal or with like how everybody reacted. But so the principal, I think, is like a well-meaning white dude, right? Who, like, apparently he first ran it by all the teachers. Like, he did it at a faculty meeting, and he, like, made them all think about the 8 white identities and, like, how they identify, how they behave in different situations, all of this stuff. And Jake, the hilarious thing is that when we did this episode, I posted it on my Instagram. And then when I got in an argument with Jay Oakerson, all these fucking white dudes all went on my Instagram and started commenting on that post that I was racist for posting that.
You're okay. Just like, oh, you're a number 3, you're a number 4.
Yeah, exactly. No, one guy actually commented, because there's eight of them. So one guy commented, 9, this white guy who just unfollowed you for being a racist and unfunny bitch. This is pretty good, actually. All right. But so it's funny because I got some of this, right? So when I posted it, there were some white people who, like, really took it. They were mad. There was even, honestly, one of our Latino listeners, he writes emails to us and shit. He responded on my Instagram post and was like, I feel like this is kind of fucking, like, profiling and whatever. You know, like, he didn't identify with what the framework was trying to say.
Yeah, whatever. That's fair.
It's fair. So we actually had a back and forth. It's great. So back to the professor. So it turns out that after this principal sent this out to all the parents, some of the fucking parents got really mad. And they started writing to that guy, to the principal, saying that he was a racist for sending out this list of 8 white identities. And then the New York Post picked it up and wrote an article about how dare this white principal send out this list of, like, that calls white people or tells white kids that they should become white traitors and white abolitionists. And, like, you know, it's like, oh my God, what the fuck are they telling our children? So then it was on Daily Mail, you know, like all the terrible right-wing websites picked it up. So then this professor starts getting hate mail from all these people who read this and are just like fucking flipping out, dude. And then they just say the most racist shit that just shows how they're one of these things, you know, like how they're freaking out. Like, there was even, and the worst thing is, like, you can expect it from conservatives, but the reason that I am, like, bringing it up now is because, you know, we deal with doxing and with, like, people fucking claiming shit is free speech and all this stuff all the time and the conflicts therein. But this shit is, like, even leftists and liberals, like, really responded badly to this, Jake. So, like, there were liberal... No, where to start? Fuck, dude. Because, okay, there was at least a couple of leftists who... Basically, one of them with a big account, he thought that it was like the New York Post made up the 8 white identities to, like, make a story. Ooh. You get me? Like, he was like, this is obviously fake. And then somebody was like, no, it's not. This is written by, like, a fucking scholar of race, you know?
Yeah. No, it's real. We did a podcast about it.
Yeah. And so then he, like, deleted that, and then he posted that it was real. But then, like, all the replies to that were then, like, liberals and leftists just, like, showing their asses all over the place, Jake.
Really?
Like, yeah, because there's, like, the liberal sentiment of, like, honestly, white fragility. It's, like, people who read white fragility and then are not self-aware enough to see that this is you fucking freaking out at being categorized in the way that all the rest of the races and cultures in the world have been categorized by white people throughout history. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, how do you think fucking people feel when they read a book that was supposed to be about them and you were putting them into categories, white people? Like, what the fuck? What the fuck do you think it felt like? So then it's these liberals responding, being like, oh, you know, this is terrible. This is the kind of thing that pushes well-meaning folk into being Republicans.
You know what? This is all fucking reminding me of.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I watched Black Messiah. Judas and the Black Messiah. It's really good, actually. Like, and I say actually, I mean actually. Like, as far as a movie can be. I'm going to actually do a podcast with to catch anyone up, doesn't know what that is. New movie. It's on HBO Max or whatever the fuck. It's a fictionalization of the story of Fred Hampton, the Black Panther. It's awesome. It's played by the two leads are played by Lakeith Stanfield and Daniel Kaluuya from Get Out, Daniel Kaluuya, right? Yeah. And it's pretty good. It doesn't actually do the things that, as a leftist, you think a movie's going to do, where it fucking whitewashes a lot of the politics. It doesn't upplay them, but it's, you know, it does it pretty well. I'm not going to say it's perfect. Okay. It's written by the Lucas brothers. Did you know that? Yeah. It's crazy, right? Yeah. Two comics that we know. Fucking twin brothers. Yeah. Really cool. But I watched it and I thought, one thing that I thought that it did really well that a lot of modern like stuff that tackles race doesn't do is portray the fucking racists in a way that is multidimensional. Because in like that Watchmen reboot, the Damon Lindelof one, or like all this Jordan Peele stuff that we've been talking about, like the Twilight Zone and all that shit, the they're racist cartoon characters. Yeah. And like, listen, racists are fun to make fun of. Like a lot of racists are cartoonish and they're in the Klan and they're from history and they're like, yeah, I get them or whatever. But the problem with portraying them that way is that what it does is the same thing that white fragility does, I think, which is it allows the white person in the audience to assign racism to other people and not to themselves. And what you should be getting out of watching a thing that tackles racism is, if you're a white person especially, you should look at the screen and go, oh my god, that's my dad, or oh my god, that's me, or oh my god, this person is caught like in a Shakespearean situation where there are multiple things pulling at them, because that is more importantly how racism works and how it's more ubiquitous that way, and it's harder to fucking solve, because like the guy in not to give away the fucking movie or whatever, it's from history, but there's a character played by Jesse Plemons, the big fucking headed guy, the big blonde guy. He's an FBI agent.
He looks like a smushed up Matt Damon.
Yeah, he looks like a dime store Philip Seymour Hoffman type of thing.
There you go. Yeah.
But he discovers at one point that his own like operation, his own FBI, like, you know, whatever the fuck, group or whatever, is lying, and they aren't actually kind of the good guys. And he thought that the Black Panthers tortured this guy, and he's been telling his informant they tortured that guy. And then his boss goes, oh, we made that up to sow discord.
Oh,
and he
shit.
Goes, wait a minute. And he has a moment where he's like, wait a minute. And then he overcomes his fucking thing where he's like, wait a minute. And then he continues to be evil. And that's what racism actually fucking looks like. He's challenged with it, and he decides to continue anyway, because he has this very liberal belief that like you have to provide for your family, and this is actually an orderly way of going about things. We are, you know, taking a higher road than, you know, he literally thinks the Black Panthers are like criminals and stuff like that. It has like, it's uncomfortable to watch because you can relate to the guy on some level if you were like in that job, him realizing, oh, he's in over his head, he's already done so much, not knowing the full destructive implications of the thing. So like, when people get mad about stuff like this Barnard Hess thing you're talking about, it's because it doesn't do what white fragility does. It doesn't go, congratulations, you're one of the good types of white people, you get to make fun of rural southern fucking evil white people. It goes, you are in this. You are on
it,
the scale
all of us
from,
in
frame
it.
From 1 to 8 or whatever, right?
Yeah. It puts all of us in it, including not white people. And, you know, the strange thing also is that it's like, such a, like, this is, you know, shout out to Principal Mark Fetterman, because that was this dude trying to be number 8, trying to be a white abolitionist. All right, that was him. No, seriously.
No, you're
this
right.
This is him. Like, fucking.
This is what happens when you try to be a number 8. You get got.
Totally. You get got. You get a fucking. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets fired over this shit. And, you know, like, think about the fact that, like, he went through this first with his staff, with, like, all the teachers and shit. And either nobody was like, you shouldn't send this to the parents, or he was like, fuck it, I'm not going to listen to you. I'm going to send it to the parents. And, you know, I think it was, like, really this, like, what an amazing and rare attempt to operate within your job, because so many people always use, this is just my job, I was just doing my job, as an excuse for the bad shit that they cooperated in or executed themselves, you know. And instead, here's a person being like, if this is my job, I'm gonna do this. Now here's the thing, the I guess what some of the New York Post wanted to point out is that the school is only like 15% white kids, right? But it's like majority Latino. So they tried to make the point that like, oh, this is this white guy telling like Latinos to think about their whiteness. And I'm like, yeah, dude, you know
yeah,
what?
Why
we
not?
Fucking need it. yeah. Hello, that's what this whole podcast is too. What the fuck are you talking about? That's fucking great. It's fantastic. And then the fact that like it went all the way. So part of the problem was that the New York Post posted the like 8 white identities along with like a little graph that they got from some other person who read the 8 white identities and then made this little fucking chart. They were like a little, you know, it's like a little dial, you know, and it went from green to red. And then red was like the worst kind of white person, right?
You yeah.
And so it was just like the internet freaking out that how dare this professor make this little chart of like color coding white people and whatever the fuck. And they don't even read and they don't even consider and they just react. And it was something that the reaction came from people from every political spectrum, white people, honestly, from every political spectrum who were just like their hackles went up or however you say that. And they either were like, this cannot possibly be real, or they were like, oh, I see how he means well, but this is just going to push more well-intended people to the right. Well-intended, motherfucker. What are you talking about? You mean more racist to the right?
Yeah. No, anytime somebody says that, it's like, we never had you to begin with, you know?
Yeah. What the fuck are you talking about?
If a thing you saw on Twitter pushes you to the right, you aren't being pushed. You are to the right. You just, yeah. You're looking for an excuse.
You were just waiting for an excuse, for another thing to tell fucking your wife who you call mother. Look, here's another fucking thing. But anyway, because I was following this drama, because, you know, like I said, the professor, now he's being doxxed and he's getting like people writing to the university saying that he should be fired and fucking trying to destroy his life because of a thing that he wrote to teach his students about how to question the power of white supremacy in the world. Right. And oh, excuse me, I'm turning into the Berber. And as I was following this, then I like would occasionally see some shit with you in Stand Up New York, but I don't follow this dude, so I don't see all the things he does.
Okay.
So what's going on over there, Jake?
Well, let me
we picking on a club every week, or what are we doing?
I guess. I mean, he came to me. This is how this shit works. I don't fucking know who this guy is. I haven't done a set at Stand Up New York in years.
You know, I feel like people should know I used to book it.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, they should know. I used to be the booker at Santa Maria for a very brief time, like 7 or 8 months.
I've talked about it on the show before. I used to stay up there, and then I found out that they don't fucking pay you unless
place.
You have, like, 2 TV credits. And I went, why the fuck would I ever work here then? You know?
Yeah.
So here's what happened, right?
Wait, I feel like I need another glass of whiskey. Hold on.
Oh, okay, we'll pause.
I can hear this whole thing.
You for sure should.
Oh, shit. Okay, go.
Okay, no, for sure. Pour yourself a drink. That's how I prefer to get down with this sort of shit.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I don't know what's...
Okay.
Here's feeling what despair over comedy overall, but please tell me. Let's go.
Here's what happened. Okay, so I... somebody retweeted it, and I saw it. I don't follow this dude either, but he's particularly kind of just losing my patience with these people. There's a lot of people that don't interact with me, but we all know who each other are, and they're like...
Yeah.
Subtweety and shit, and like, I fucking hate this dude, Aaron Berg. He is the guy who hosts like a show called In Hot Water on Compound Media with this guy named Gino Visconti. And like, okay, so when I got doxxed, for example, they just made like 10 episodes in a row where they just showed my fucking dick and everything. And they were like going through my relationship with Kate and saying like, you know, oh, she killed Raghav so yeah. She could fuck me and all this stuff. All this stuff that like neither of us fucking are okay with at all, and if we lived in anything resembling a just society, I could be able to fucking, you know, sue them over or whatever, but there's nothing fucking we can do. There's people just want to psychologically harass people, right? So this guy's a piece of shit. Like, I'm completely fucking done with him. He's beyond the pale. In that Seth Simons thing that got released, they went over like the segments on that show are called like faggot ISIS and rape of the day and black guy of the day. Like, this shit's fucking horrible. And honestly, look, I'm a fucking edgy comedian. I could laugh at rape of the day if I thought you were joking, but you are like harassing my girlfriend without her consent. Mm-hmm. That leads me to kind of think this is not really a joke anymore, you know? So I fucking hate this guy.
I mean, they're not funny, either one of them.
No, they're failed comics.
I will say they're not funny. I mean, Aaron's a good club host.
Yeah.
You know, if you like him calling people F words because They're wearing pink or something like that.
Yeah, that guy Gino Biscotti lives in a, like a, what do you call it, a storage unit and shit. That's all I know about him.
Really?
Yeah, but I think it's like...
I mean, I don't want to make fun of anybody.
I mean, fuck that. Fuck those people. The only reason I'm hesitating...
I'm trying to be better than them, Jake. No, be better than myself.
The only reason I'm hesitating to make fun of them is because I think it's literally a thing that they think is funny, and I don't even want to fucking, you know...
Add to it.
Like, yeah. But it, objectively, it's funny how much of a fucking loser that guy is. So, fucking... This guy, Aaron Berg, you know, last summer during, like... all the Black Lives Matter stuff, everyone came out of their homes, right? Everyone fucking went on the street, and there was something important to go protest for, right? And that's how we discovered we can go outside, and we've been living in sort of semi-inside-outside COVID world sense, right?
Yeah.
If anyone doesn't remember, that's kind of how that happened. Well, shortly after, actually during the Black Lives Matter stuff, there was this movement called like Save Our Stages, which was people that were protesting, like, I don't even know, they were just doing marches. It's not as if the police have anything to do with this. They were just marching around going like, hey, you know, we're small business owners or whatever, and we should be able to open our restaurants.
I'm gonna make this context even worse, Jake, and say this, that like it was very markedly clear that when Black Lives Matter protests and other, you know, similarly minded protests were happening in New York City, there was a contingent of comedians and industry club owners who did not make their presence known at any of those Black Lives Matter or like social justice fucking protests and whatever. They didn't like post shit. They didn't go outside. They made jokes about, oh, I guess the COVID's not real when you want to go out and virtue signal or whatever they fucking call it, right? Shit like that. And then when this fucking Save the Clubs shit started and Save the Laughs and whatever, all of a sudden those people co-opted the whole idea of like, this is more important than COVID, so we're going to go outside.
Well, they co-opted like oppression. Like they were like, also fighting for something that we believe
but
in.
I just wanted to be clear that they did not participate in the other kind of protest.
Oh no, not at all.
Yeah, they very much were like, they made jokes about it.
They called them riots and they said, oh, they're violent.
Exactly.
And all this stuff, right?
Exactly. They made those kinds of jokes. And then all of a sudden we're like, you know what would work if we did this to get
these are clubs open? Racist white people. Like, I'm not trying to pussyfoot around this. These are actively racist. Fucking put them in a goddamn Jordan Peele movie. They're like, they're just like, they're not even the fucking liberal, like, they don't understand it, systemic racist people. They're just fucking racists. So they were doing this stuff and like taking all these fucking Instagram photos and trying to start this hashtag like Save the Stages or whatever, and it was deeply insulting to fucking everyone. And mostly what's really stupid about it to me is that it's a movement for small businesses that portrays small businesses as being put upon while they simultaneously put upon their fucking workers, right? So I'll get into that in a little bit, but this shit happened. This guy Aaron Berg was like down at the face of it. He's a piece of shit. He's been fucking getting people to tweet shit at Kate to like rape her with a railroad spike and shit for 3 years straight. This guy should die in a fucking fire. I'll kill him with a hammer, right? I hate him. The funniest thing the other day is that he tweeted about, God, I'm trying to find the original line here, but he was talking about like this thing that Dave Chappelle is talking about where it's like, fuck you, you can't stop me from having fun. And we all go, it's not about you getting COVID, it's about you spreading COVID, right? Yeah. He said that when he does stand up, he is risking his own life to do stand up and that he's like brave and that when people, you know, give shit to comics for performing right now, it's like, you're giving shit to these brave people who are risking their lives to entertain you. That is not how a pandemic works. You are healthy. You're not risking your life. You're risking my fucking mom's life. You asshole. Right.
I mean, look, this was probably a joke that they thought was a joke, but something that I saw like a week ago, because also his background to this is Stand Up New York is also, not only have they done part of this like Save the Stage nonsense, right, where they like fucking were trying to co-opt any kind of fucking radical feelings towards this bullshit, but they also are the ones running shows on the train, They are the ones that did shows in churches during like the phase one fucking, we were all in lockdown and then the churches were still allowed to congregate.
Yeah.
So they did a comedy show in a church and they literally like promoted it as like, oh, laughs are religion to some people.
Yeah. Fuck?
And then with the new thing, right, as of the 14th, where it's like restaurants opened in New York City for indoor dining. On the list is also weddings of up to 100 people.
Right.
So I don't know if you had seen this, but it came into my timeline because somebody retweeted it. And Danny, the owner of Stand Up New York, one of the owners of Stand Up New York, he, well, the one that's acting a fool on Twitter, he, I think he thought was joking and he like tweeted how he was like going to try to do a wedding comedy show. So are there any comedians who would like to get married so that he could do a comedy show? And guess who responded? Because Danny tweeted the fucking screen grab of the text message. Aaron Berg. Yeah,
fucking Aaron Berg, right?
Yeah, that he's married already to another comic, but that they will renew their vows. So I don't know if it's a joke and they're not really going to do this, but I would not be surprised if they actually
I'm sure they are. I mean, the fucking Berg and Bisconti and all these people have been, like, tweeting, you know, photos of them doing shows in stand-up New York and stuff. They're all friends. Like, Danny told me, oh, that's, I'm good friends with him. He's friends with the family or whatever. So, like, this is just them.
That's what I was going to tell you. The whole thing about, like, they only book credits, that's not true. They book whoever kisses Danny's ass.
I'm sure. Yeah. Well, fucking, that ain't me either.
I literally quit over the fact that I did not want to book a guy named Goomba Johnny. Who the owner insisted I had to book because he plays basketball with him on Saturdays.
Right. Yeah. So fuck these people, right? Fuck this entire way of doing this art form, right? This is kind of where I'm at. You listen to the show, you're into that, right? Okay.
I really have been trying to burn less bridges, but it's like, it's hard not to, man.
Oh, I'm like, fuck this shit, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm exercising. I'm sleeping well.
Me too.
And yet, this is what's coming out of my mouth. Fuck this shit.
Yeah. So, I fucking tweeted. I just honestly, I didn't even have a joke for it. I just tweeted like ha 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 a bunch of times because like a comedian risking their life is the funniest fucking thing. It killed me, right? I don't follow this dude Danny. This fucking person that was part owner of the Stand Up New York or whatever. He didn't follow me, but they always find me, right? And so what happened is somebody responded to me and they went, is this person serious? And I was like, yeah, here's how I know they're serious. They're part of this fucking right-wing ass, Nazi-ass thing called Save the Stages. And then Danny responded to me, and he's like, oh, you're calling me a Nazi, even though I'm Jewish? And the thing is, there's a lot of you right now, actually. There's quite a few. In fact, the main thing that Nazis do these days is find a fucking person who checks a box and go, oh, you can't call me racist because there's a Cuban guy here or whatever. So, like, it's not about what your intent, it's not about what your fucking, like, intent is, but what your action is, right? And so, this is complicated. Like, I'm using the word Nazi flippantly because I'm on Twitter or whatever, but fucking, I'll defend it.
But dude, but it's also like, you fucking comedy people don't understand the concept of exaggerating slightly for the purpose of amusement. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? That's what we do.
Right, exactly. But that's what I was doing when I said the word Nazi. When I said the word right wing, I was not exaggerating.
No, that's accurate.
At all, because what's going on with fucking small business owners in this shit is, you were part of that Save the Stages movement that is low-key very racist in response to the Black Lives Matter movement.
Yeah.
What exactly is going on here, right? And so he kept trying to hide behind this, like, well, I'm Jewish and I'm giving health care. They have a program right now where they're, like, giving health care, but it's means-tested to comedians. So it's for comedians, but it's for whoever the fuck he would book at his club, Goomba Jones or whatever the fuck, Goomba Johnny, right? There's a board form on his website where it's like, hey, you live in America and you can't get fucking healthcare. Well, prove you're a comic and tell me three clubs you've worked at or whatever. This doesn't make any sense. I have not had the time to look into it because this is a thing happening in my Twitter replies, so I don't know the ins and outs of it, but it is clearly means tested and it's, I think, a tax write-off. If I can...
Of course,
like, this is so your small business doesn't lose money, right? So what's happening is he's hiding behind all those things. He's going, oh, I'm a small business owner or whatever. And, like, I'll fucking explain it right now for anyone who doesn't understand this. When he says he's a small business owner and when they say that they are trying to save their stages and they are trying to reopen their restaurants because they're being oppressed, yada, 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 what's happening is these people are business owners, which means that they don't do anything except force other people to go to work, who then they profit off of. And since they can't do that right now, they have two options. Their one option would be to lobby the government to fucking pay their bills while everyone stays home, and to pay workers' bills and stuff like that. That is possible. It happened in other countries. They shut everything down, like New Zealand and shit. They fucking got through the pandemic like 2 months. There's all sorts of examples of how this has worked and could work and yada, yada, yada. But what they are arguing for subtly is, oh, we have a right to stay open, and we have a right to open our restaurants. And this is how the fucking pandemic keeps like spreading, is that you keep opening indoor dining and shit and saying, well, the government's trying to stop us from doing comedy shows and having indoor dining and stuff like that. And so what we need is the government to allow us to send our fucking servers and cooks and dishwashers and all these people to work for us so that they continue to make a profit at the expense of all these people who are going to get fucking sick. I understand, like, some people, honestly, there's a lot of small business owners in the world who don't understand this. They're in a shitty situation. They don't know. If you ask them, what would you prefer? They fucking tell you, pay everyone, right? But we're kind of gaslit into thinking the only options are to tell everyone that they have to fucking work and to exploit them further, and that you are actually the person being most put upon because you're this heroic small business owner or whatever. That.
Jake, but these fucking people are even worse than that, okay? They're worse than that, because what you're saying right now applies to a lot of small business owners across America, right? Who are like doing this fucking shit of, I'm just trying to save my business, and they've been like gaslit into believing that instead of being mad at the structure, they should fucking demand their individual right to exist, right?
Yeah.
But the comedy angle of it really turns it into like a psychopathic fucking situation here, because Danny, he's not a comedy guy. Like, he does not have comedy taste. He doesn't know anything about comedy.
He could have fooled me with the way he was talking to me on Twitter this week.
I know. But here's the thing. That's like a new thing with him. He wasn't like vocal on Twitter before the pandemic. He, you know, like maybe like a little bit. He doesn't have a lot of followers. When I worked at Stand Up New York, he definitely didn't use his Twitter at all, you know?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. His business, The Creek, also, they were failing before the pandemic.
Yeah.
They were. Yeah, they both were. Stand Up New York, like, they didn't even have, like, they were blacklisted by liquor vendors, by like all restaurant vendors, you get me? So they were ordering their liquor on Amazon.
Wait,
they
really? Were like,
yeah.
Why?
Yeah, when I was there, because they hadn't paid their bills.
Oh, they didn't have their fucking license.
Yeah, so then they were because bills. In New York City, you are like on an approved vendor list for liquor.
Gotcha.
You get me? And then if you fucking go into debt with them and you haven't paid your bills, it's like a credit report kind of thing for the liquor distributors kind of thing. Yeah. You get me? And they, like, literally, it was like this business was going under. And there was like a 23-year-old girl who was managing the club because she had just graduated from school with a marketing degree, and she worked for this online marketing company. She got assigned to the Stand Up New York account. So she went to Stand Up New York one night, met Danny. Danny thought she was really cute and fun. So he was like, why don't you manage the club? So this was my boss when I was fucking booking Stand Up New York. And this poor girl had to like figure out how to get all the supplies for this fucking venue without any actual suppliers and distributors of restaurants and club, like, actual fucking supplies, you know, because we were blacklisted with everyone. So all this to say that, like, they were already doing badly, right? But, you know, you've run shows before, I've run shows before, and you know how, like, you always need a gimmick to promote your show, right? Like, if it's somebody's birthday, if it's a holiday edition, an anniversary, or like whatever the fuck you can think of to make it like a new reason to promote, like, oh, it's a special lineup because we do this shit every week. Somebody give me a reason to make this different than last week, right? This is what these motherfuckers did, Jake. they are 100%, like, Danny is a businessman, and it's 100% a business gimmick to try to, like, make it, like, this is his opportunity while he's sitting at home in a pandemic to act like he gives a shit about comedy, and he's trying to keep it going through all of this.
Act like he gives a shit about comedians.
Yeah, dude.
You never pay anyone.
He has multiple businesses, and this is one of them where he just fucking threw in some money, and it's been losing money for literally years. What are you doing, dude? You're just a rich dude, and this is like your fun little thing.
Every dickhead small business owner is a bored rich person, and the one good thing about this fucking pandemic is it should level these people from their connections to these stupid pieces of real estate that they own. Fuck that shit. That shit should belong to somebody else. So one thing I want to kind of
just think about the gimmick thing, though. The fact that they're using this pandemic situation as the gimmick to keep their business going, whether it is, look, we're still keeping comedy going in New York, or look, we're moving to Austin to start a whole new thing.
Yeah.
Sorry, same shit.
Fair, same shit. One thing I want to kind of hammer home before I kind of move on from this to the next part of this, which is that this thing where he's saying, like, oh, we're giving healthcare visits. This is a very awkward phrase. We're giving free healthcare visits. I don't know what the details of this fucking deal are, but this is not an ideal situation, right? I'm literally talking to a guy about people who make other people in my life feel unsafe in public with, like, threats of violence. And he's going, well, that's my friend. I don't fucking care. This is the person who's in charge of whether or not people in my line of work
get insurance,
get to go to the hospital. Fuck that shit. And everyone knows this isn't ideal. Everyone can kind of agree on some level that, like, if you could just go to the doctor, that'd be better. And then everyone, you know, politically gets into, well, how would that work or whatever. But, like, that is ideally the situation here. I don't want to have to go to the doctor and then go, well, does Rebecca Trent like you or not or whatever? You know, this this is bad. But this is how American healthcare works. So when they sort of, when small business owners realize that they have control over things like that, like benefits and stuff like that, they then use it to control you. Why wouldn't they? It's leverage that they have, right? So this is really bad. And I don't think he's really saying, well, this is the way it should be. He's just saying, well, this is the way it is, and what else are you going to do about it, right? And all that has kind of got me thinking about something I watched recently. Adam Curtis is very popular right now. He's a big leftist documentarian. He does shit on the BBC, made Hypernormalization, which is very popular, and he's got a new thing out on Amazon or something, ironically enough. Even though he's not a big Marxist necessarily, he's very popular on the left, and he's a crazy intellectual weirdo guy, right? Well, he made a documentary called Century of the Self that I watched a while back. It's really interesting. It's like four parts, and it's basically about this guy, Edward Bernays. Have you ever heard of him?
I don't think so.
Well, he's really interesting. He is Sigmund Freud's nephew, right? And so Freud's nephew left Germany, moved to America, and took a lot of Freud's ideas with him and ended up creating, he's the godfather of the industry known as public relations, right? PR, fucking flag planted by one guy, Edward Bernays, right? So at the beginning of PR, like what kind of sprouted this is he was part of the CIA operation to overthrow the legitimate socialist Guatemalan government, right? During the whole Chiquita Banana fucking United Fruit Company thing. So basically, it would not have gone over that well back in the States. This is like one of the first times the United States has ever just overthrown a government because they weren't allowing private companies from the U.S. to extract profit. And you know, the local government was like, no, that's our shit, right? So this is one of the first times they ever did this. So they had to come up with a way to play it off, right? To go, how do we sell this to the American people? Well, they hired Edward Bernays because his whole thing was controlling the masses, trying to figure out ways to explain, like, oh, this had to happen. So he came up with this whole narrative that there's this fucking evil communist dictatorship and the United States has to come in and topple, you know, the guy and install this other guy on behalf of, you know, fucking democracy and freedom and whatever. In reality, they were installing somebody to steal money from fucking, you know, people that were putting into basically slave labor, right? What's really interesting about this is that, so this documentary kind of goes on to talk about, like, how that just way of thought permeates through all of American history up until the, you know, the all throughout the 20th century or whatever. A lot of it's very individualistic and But it's all kind of premised around a couple of things. One of them is that basically Freud's bad. Freud's bad because what he theorized about humanity was that there are basically really evil, violent forces that are primal within us, and that civilization is, you know, for the grace of God, the thing that came along that stopped us from raping and murdering each other.
Freud is bad. Yes, I sign off on that, and it's for more than just that. But go on.
Sure, there's a lot of reasons he's bad, but that's one of them. And that is, I've talked about Kropotkin a long time ago on the show, but he wrote a really great book called Mutual Aid that sort of argues in opposition to this, that humans are demonstrably not like that, and that there's no reason to, you know, base all of our fucking social laws on
housewives from Austria in the 19th century. That's the problem.
So there's this thing where, so Edward Bernays became this guy who's like, you know, the government basically hired him to control the masses because they deemed the masses as very stupid and very violent and evil, and they need to be lied to, right? The other thing is, there's this quote I was thinking about when I was thinking about all this, because I was reading a thing about, like, basically healthcare during the COVID crisis and how they've been able to use clever media tactics to frame not really doing anything about it on a governmental level and putting everything off on the individual, right?
Yeah.
So Adolf Reed is very controversial, said, the American liberal no longer, I think, is like, knows how to be political. The American liberal only knows bearing witness to suffering. That's as far as you can go. So there's this big thing where PR, the art of public relations, which is basically damage control, and is basically a way of convincing people of something, to get fucked, to not believe in a better world, is to go, there's nothing more you can fucking do, which is what this guy is doing here very subtly. If he doesn't, he probably isn't even smart enough to know that he's doing this. This is just the American way of life now, is going like, well, you know, I as a business owner, why would I go lobby for a better world? Why would I be lobbying the government for everyone to be able to go to the hospital? It's much more profitable and makes more sense narratively for him to go, oh, I'm the hero. I'm providing you healthcare because, yeah, this is not a good situation, but what else are you going to do? Because the world is inherently bad and we're all fucking terrible. And, you know, this is you cannot be political. You can only bear witness to suffering, right? I was thinking about all this because the other thing that happens in that documentary is they talk about Herbert Marcuse, who comes along and sort of argues the opposite and throws all of Freud's, like, he has, like, children and shit that are kind of carrying on his legacy at this point, and they're inventing, like, advertising and subliminal messaging and stuff like that that's all very individualistic. Like, okay, here's an interesting thing. You know when you buy, like, cake mix and it says to put an egg in it? There's no reason to put an egg in cake mix. They made cake mix that already has a powdered egg in it that you literally would just have to add water to and heat up and you would get a cake.
So it's just to, like, make you feel like you're baking?
Yes, because people got depressed. Housewives got depressed and they said, okay, take the egg out of it. Tell them to break an egg.
Well, but that's like the door close button on elevators.
Yeah, right. It doesn't do anything.
It doesn't do anything, but it makes people feel better.
Yeah, because it gives you, like, this weird, like,
feeling that you're controlling or more involved in the outcome. Right.
And that's kind of, like, similar to, like, all the self-care sort of shit that they just tell us now that comes out of the media that's sort of, like, think-tanked into, you know, wink, wink, you don't have fucking healthcare, you can't go to the doctor. Well, here's what you can do, and it'll feel good because you'll feel, like, in control of it. Yeah. You'll feel like you did something, and you can pose the argument that is pretty bulletproof that goes all the way back to Edward Bernays, like, well, what else could anyone possibly do? You know, nothing better is possible. So Marcuse, though, is like he's like a fucking big hippie Marxist. He comes along and sort of, like, sparks the, you know, fucking new left hippie free love thing. And he offers a very radical point of view at the time, which is that you are not actually suffering from evil that comes within, from within, like Freud argues. You are suffering from evil that comes from without,
from outside,
like Marx argues. And he's operating at the same time as Martin Luther King, who has similar views, who says things like, I think this is very funny because the fucking Stand Up New York tweeted like Martin Luther King on Martin Luther King Day. Martin Luther King talked about this and said that he's maladjusted to society and he's proud to be maladjusted to this society because this society is not good. And the whole point is broken. To fucking like change it. Right. So
Mark, but it's funny because this connects to the eight white identities in the sense of like how, you know, like people want to react badly to it as like, oh, you're trying to categorize me and put me into a thing. But it's like, consider the ways in which we keep the system going, you know, like in the ways in which we buy into this is what's best for us, right, is to reify the current thing. And I think this is like what happens with a lot of small business owners is because I would say small business owners vary in political leaning, but then this stupid capitalist thing of like you're supposed to succeed through your small business pushes them into this side of like bad, I don't know.
Well, there's the small business thing is like really tricky because in American politics, it is one of the most dastardly fucking things about this country is that small business is used in this specifically this Bernays style PR thing that I'm talking about, which is that like when that guy said like, well, how could I be bad? I'm a small business owner, you know?
Yeah.
What do you, I mean, it doesn't make any sense if you think about it. What do you mean? Who gives a shit?
Like, but they use it in the same way as the troops, Jake.
Yeah, no, same fucking shit. Like,
Do you not support the troops? And then if you're like, no, I don't, because you're literally the arm of imperialism that's oppressing the rest of the world. Oh, but you don't support the troops. Oh, no.
Well, like, with the troops and with small business, there is a subtle implication that you can call into question, which is that why is this building towards a better world? And the troops people will tell you, oh, it's because we're being attacked by people that hate our freedom, all this stuff. Yeah. When you say it out loud, it's like, oh, it's bullshit. It's not fucking true.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean? Like, we need protection from what? We are the worst country in the world. Like, what do you mean? You know? And then with the small business stuff, yeah, really, I mean, fucking one of the things that radicalized me as like a Marxist or whatever early on in my life is I really just went, wait a minute. Everyone can't get rich. I mean, what is it? What is this thing they talk about all the time with like everyone starts a business and the businesses all grow? Yeah. I mean, like,
who works at your business then if everybody gets a business?
Right. Like, wealth is a relative concept in capitalism. This does not end. No one has ever finished the fucking sentence of like, small businesses will start and then, like, what do you mean? And then nothing fucking happens.
And then what? And then who pays teachers? Like, it just is like so dumb where you don't consider anything beyond your own experience. It's pretty bad.
No, it's a completely morally either neutral or negative thing to start a small business. The only moral thing in any of these contexts is to put money into like public, like where we can all access it and it fucking goes into bettering our lives, like a healthcare system that doesn't means test you based on whether you're a fucking comedian that
and
works.
And whether you have a TV credit or play basketball with the owner.
Literally, this guy is arguing to me and he's saying, oh, I'm such a good person. I'm doing this healthcare program for comedians. And it's like, I'm a person who needs to go to the hospital. You hate me, so that means you're telling me I can't go to the hospital.
Okay, this is obviously just shit-talking. Like, I'm just interrupting to fucking throw some other inappropriate commentary in here, but
yeah,
you know what a street team is? Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Stand Up New York is famously one of the last clubs that was still using these street teams in New York City. And for people who don't know, the street teams are the people who like basically accost you in Manhattan.
Yeah, lie about who you have.
And lie
club.
About who's on the lineup.
We got Tina Fey tonight.
We got Tina Fey, exactly. And we got fucking Tracy Morgan, George Carlin. You're going to see George Carlin tonight.
Yeah, dead you know, people.
Like,
yeah.
Straight up dead people, fucking famous people just like accosting tourists. And they're just like, you like comedy? You come to this thing. They overcharge you and when I started booking Stand Up New York, they were still working with the street team that had already been accused of sexual misconduct towards comics, Jake. They had a system going through which the street team didn't pay the people who were on the street, like, barking people in, you know? Instead, they got promised spots at stand-up news.
Yeah. So all these fucking things work.
Yeah, dude. So, like, people think I'm joking when I say that they're fucking straight up abusing you. Like, they literally had comics stand on street corners in New York City for hours at a time, and their payment, quote unquote, was a 6-minute set at Stand Up New York in front of 6 tourists who did not speak English.
Dude, comedy, like,
who all paid $75 to $100 worth of drinks and cover to be there.
Right now, with this fucking, with all these comedy clubs on the ropes like this, there is no reason to save them. They are your oppressor. You have nothing to lose but your chains. We could fucking watch these people die and then just do comedy. Like, wherever the fuck. Figure out a different way to do it. That
now we know we can do it in parks and churches and subways.
Right. There's no reason for this person that just owns a shitty bar to be involved in the situation at all. So that makes this, like, Save Our Stages movement all the more ridiculous. Because, like, this has nothing to do with your little fucking restaurant that you own or whatever. Although he told me, oh, we don't have a kitchen. So you're a bar. Okay, cool.
Not even, because they buy their liquor one
bar. You're not even a fucking bar.
they're your friend who has a lot of credit card debt.
No shit. Oh, man, that's so funny. Mostly what they have going for them is that wallpaper. I'll give them that. It's pretty good.
And it's a pretty good room. it works out, yeah, but
yeah, I don't know, man. I don't mean, okay, so like, well, let's dust kind of just.
Should we try to get Bernard Hess on this show?
Yeah, we totally should.
Just like, tell us about getting canceled.
I've been thinking, like, all this stuff is kind of swirling around in one big thing in my head in regards to, like, Herbert Marcuse, because Matt Taibbi wrote this really. Matt Taibbi went insane. You know, he used to be awesome, and then he became like an anti-cancel. He became one of these fucking people, like a kind of conservative right-wing guy, and he hates fucking Herbert Marcuse now, which is really odd. It's a really intellectual way to basically be a, you know, a chud.
Yeah.
He wrote something about him recently, and then also I was thinking about all this because I've also been watching Harley Quinn, which is this show on HBO that have you seen it?
No, this is a cartoon?
Yeah, you should watch it. It's actually really good. It's weird because the animation style, when you see it, it looks like it's for kids. Like, it's just because it's the same animator, the animation style is like Batman, the animated series and stuff like that from, like, you know, when we were kids and shit. But like
the square shoulders and shit?
Yeah, but they fuck. It's raunchy. They curse. They fuck. They murder people. There's blood and all this stuff. Immediately you go, oh, fuck. It's funny, right? It's like the adult mean and stuff like that. And like James Adomian is on it. And
oh, really? Cool.
Some comedians who have blocked me on Twitter but are pretty good on the show. Mm-hmm. I'll give them that. Yeah. Are on it. And you know, it's fucking written by whoever. But
you deserve to get blocked by some people, Jake. Shut up.
Yeah, sure.
That's fair. I'll take it. It's fair.
Listen, I ain't disagreeing with you there.
Yeah, I'm like, I gotten unfollowed by some, and I'm like, fair, totally fair.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be mutuals.
Aaron unfollowed me, but his wife still followed me.
That's funny. Ron Funches is
household on. Household overall is checking in on me.
Ron Funches plays a shark guy on this show, and he unfollowed me because I was mean to Roseanne. Well, Roseanne is racist against Mexicans.
He was working for her, right?
He just said, I like her. And I was like, great, I don't. Like, what's the conflict here? And he's just like, no, fuck you. Like, it didn't make any sense. Like, his thing about it was he was like, well, as a black person in America, sometimes I have to put up with people who are racist. Yeah. And it's like, I understand that, but that doesn't mean everyone else has to put up with the specific people that you choose. Because he framed it like that. He was saying, like, well, I have to pick and choose.
Like, I gave her a pass, so you also should give her a pass.
That doesn't apply to everyone else. That's literally individual. Yeah. Anyway, he's on the show. It's fucking great, right? It's very funny. It's actually, like, it's like in the second season. And it's like, you never watched Venture Brothers, really, but like it's reminiscent of like the that show was really good. And it's just really fucking clever, and it's like a good comedy writing. It's up to date, and it deals with all this modern stuff. But it centers around Harley Quinn, whose origin story is that she's a psychiatrist, right?
Ooh.
Yeah. it's really interesting. So Harley Quinn's like origin story as a character like on a meta level is that character was never in the Batman canon until the 90s when the animated series came out, which is very popular among millennials, right?
Yeah.
And
Zennials, thank you so much.
Sure. They wrote in like this kind of girlfriend assistant sidekick character for the Joker.
But she was like the best.
She's great. She's very popular. She spoke with this thick New York Jewish accent.
Yeah.
So they,
baby. She'd be like, babe.
Yeah, they did away with that in the show, which I think is a good call because it was kind of a lot. But
oh, I loved it.
Then she kind of had her own like movie, like the character kind of was a worked. It was like a big hit, you know. It's been she was like the good part of Suicide Squad, Birds of Prey. The act
was great. It was
a fucking great movie, right? It's really interesting, right? So she's a specifically millennial kind of girl bossy character. But what's weird, I guess I'm trying to tie this to this, like, Bernard Hayes shit.
Well, can I tie it to fucking Buffy?
Yes.
Have you followed any of the shit going on with Buffy?
No. What's going on with Buffy?
We're canceling Joss Whedon again.
Oh, I heard. Let me, let me pause real quick.
Okay.
Go ahead, Joss Whedon.
Yeah, no, he's getting canceled again. I don't know if you saw.
I caught wind. I couldn't really keep up with what it was.
It's very weird because it doesn't seem like it's like a new canceling. It's more like people who used to work with him are now being asked to make a comment on what side they're on or whatever. But it is very strange. Wait, but I forgot what the context was before. Because
I was talking about the girl bossiness of like Harley Quinn.
Right. Okay. So how weird the intent could be, right? Because people are really mad at Joss Whedon for very fair reasons about being an abuser and shit. And then like Xander was a bad character who was like the friend who was also kind of like a pushy kind of rapey friend, but then he got rejected and put in the friend zone. So I don't know. But there's this whole thing of like ignoring, for example, from my generation, I don't know if I'm a generation by Zennial, but like Buffy was the first show, Buffy the Vampire Slayer was the first show that I ever saw where there was a female hero who was not a hero based on the fact that she was protecting a child or she got raped and she was like doing revenge. You know what I mean? It was just like the same thing as Spider-Man, right? She suddenly had some fucking powers and she was a teenager and she had to figure out how to wield these powers responsibly and also go through puberty, right? And it was like inspiring. It was awesome. It was so great to see a girl hero that wasn't based in motherhood or in rape revenge. And then now, 20 years later, everybody's mad. Buffy and at Joss Whedon, and they have fair criticisms, you know, but it like obscures the thing where it really mattered. But I don't know how this connects to what you were talking about.
Well, let me talk about it a little bit more because I have a lot of thoughts on it. Yeah. Which is like, so the show is really good, but I think that like superhero crap, it's really complicated because it's almost like inherently set up to be very individualistic and bougie. And they're also all cops, even though I think the reason that like things like Harley Quinn are good and that people respond to them is because like we actually, a lot of people that are smart don't like the cop characters anymore, like Batman. Yeah. We like these people that are kind of,
we like the side people.
They're like put upon, like it's not their fault. And they're not like presumptuous assholes who decided to take the law into their own hands. They're the victims of the cops in some ways. Yeah. Right. But I think that like her origin story kind of calls into questions a lot of what's going on with this like Edward Bernays stuff in regards to like, you know, is he right? Does who you are come from within, or is Herbert Marcuse right? Is who you are come from without, or just the forces of society that mold you? So her origin story in the show is that she's a psychiatrist and that she has this patient who's in Arkham Asylum, who's the Joker, and she sort of falls in love with them and they both go crazy and he throws her into the acid that made him. And then
which
she
is hot.
It's fucking cool.
It's
yeah.
It's romantic. Yeah.
No, it's fucking awesome, right?
I'm fucked up showing my sickness here, but so romantic.
But they do something really interesting in the show and also in like that Birds of Prey movie where it sort of starts off with they break up and then it's a very millennial, like individual Ridiculous thing where it goes like, is that's your shitty ex-boyfriend who this show is not about her as defined by that guy. It's about her as her, which is what you're talking about with Buffy, right?
Right. But it is also about the fact that there is this phase of trying to define yourself through this guy that you love and you're with.
Yeah.
And that fails. And then you have to find your actual self.
Yeah. Right?
Which is common to both Buffy and this girl.
Harley Quinn, right?
Harley Quinn.
Yeah. Harley Quinzel is her original name before.
Is that a real name, Quinzel?
All the Batman villains have names that are like,
that's,
you know,
so funny.
Mr. Freeze,
Freeze
or whatever.
Like Freezeburg.
Yeah. It's all just shit like that. So, But in the show, they do something kind of interesting, which is that, you know, she breaks up with the Joker. She still feels defined by the Joker.
Yeah.
They go into her brain. They try to figure out, like, why are you this character? Why did you go crazy? And they go through, like, her upbringing with her family and stuff like that. They can't really pinpoint it. And then eventually in her, like, they go into her brain and they're like going through her memories. They go into the memory where Joker threw her in the acid. And then, like, somehow she gets into a fight with, like, the real Joker. I can't remember the exact details, but basically what happens thematically is that she redefines it. And she goes, this is not actually when I became Harley Quinn. She, like, punches Joker in the face in real life and goes, this is when I became Harley Quinn. It's happening right now. Like, me taking control of my whole life and changing myself from being defined by my ex-boyfriend is actually my origin story. I get to define my own origin story, which is cool, but it's still very bourgeois, right? Because it's very, like, individualistic and shit. And it's...
Seeing this is you... You simultaneously built up my defense of Buffy and then knocked it down.
It's, like, both. The thing about, like, millennial culture, especially on the level of these, like, superhero things and stuff like that, even this, which is not a corny standard superhero thing, this is a cool creative one that has, you know, little funding, so it got to be interesting or whatever. It's still thematically individualistic in this way, like the fucking breaking the egg and putting it in the cake mix or whatever, where it's like the only thing that you can do in the world is you individually defining yourself. And feminism, and sorry to get into this or whatever, but, like, the way it's defined is, like, you know, through, like, this Harley
Quinn.
Sorry
to comment.
Like, these characters like Harley Quinn and fucking, you know, what do you call Buffy? It's kind of a trick because it's kind of like, hey, you don't let, like, men be small business owners anymore. Now you're a small business owner. It's completely overlooking, like, we don't get out of this fucking mess unless there's no more small fucking business owners.
I know, dude. I guess sort of related to this is, like, okay, did you ever watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
I watched the movie when I was a kid, and I've had
the movie is not the thing.
I liked it, but
the movie was the jumping off point to the series, which I think is the actual cultural impact. And
I watched some of the series, but I admittedly, like, didn't stick hard enough.
Like, I did.
Yeah, no, I
okay.
I feel so kind of bad about it because I told a lot of girlfriends.
There's an episode of Buffy that is Spike. You remember Spike, the character?
Yeah.
Okay. So Spike is a vampire that does not have a soul. Evil. We hate him. He's a bad guy. And Buffy, the vampire slayer, she dies and she comes back from death, right? And this is a fucked up thing. Like, it's like a fucked up moment in the series of Buffy because her friends and family brought her back from death. And she was happy being dead. You get me? So she comes back to the horror of being alive, and the next thing that she does is she fucks Spike, this vampire without a soul. And there's a episode, I forget what the title is of the episode, I'm sure diehard Buffy fans know, but it's just a scene where Buffy fucks Spike for the first time, Jake. And it's like a very violent sexual interaction where the whole house breaks down, like they fucking destroy the world around them fucking. And as, like, a post-teen, I guess, like early 20s, I don't know, or teen, I don't know when I watched this, super hot. Like, I was like, this is so hot. Like, sure. Dude, just go for the darkest thing that makes you fucking come and, like, this is bad, but I want it. Was amazingly, like, nothing like it had been on TV before. You get me?
Oh, I know so many people who, yeah, they're mad at me that I haven't watched all this shit. Yeah, no, right? I totally
like,
get it.
I don't think Spike is hot, but this interaction, this like self-hate, like it's the first time I ever saw hate fucking, I think, on TV, you know, like self-hate fucking, like I'm doing this out of like, I hate myself and I just need to feel alive again kind of shit. All right. Point is, now in 2021, there's people being like, that was a bad episode. It is about a person who is in a bad place and that this is like kind of rapey and that this is kind of like they're projecting onto Joss Whedon all these things of like wanting to fuck a woman who is in a bad emotional situation. You get me? And I just don't see that connection. I think it's like separate whether like the thing that was portrayed in that Buffy episode is a real thing that exists, and it's separate from whatever you feel from this Joss Whedon person, you know? But it makes me think a lot about this fucking comedy shit where, like, a lot of people are trying to separate how they perceive themselves publicly from what they actually do in real life. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it's reminding me of, like, kind of what I... What I was talking about a couple episodes ago with, like, the, you know, can you cancel fucking Garcia Marquez over, like, the parts of the book that aren't really...
like teens or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean... Yeah. Well, okay, no, explain it to me, though. How does this, like, relate to the dissociation that's happening? Because, like, what's happening with Joss Whedon? Is he just getting canceled?
Well, he's getting canceled because in real life, he was abusive. Right? So, like, in the production of the series...
You know what this reminds me of?
What?
Well, go ahead. In the production...
Well, so this is the thing, I guess, is that... So, Joss Whedon, while creating Buffy, was an abusive person who was, like, fucking his interns and creating this, like, discord among the people. And then he also created the character of Xander, who was this, like, friend zone asshole, right? Who, like... felt like he deserved to fuck Buffy,
yeah.
But he got sidelined because he's just a friend, right? So, like, the show does have these themes of Joss Whedon feeling like he deserved a certain girl and he didn't get her.
There's so much of that in, like, that generation's media.
Yeah, and that's there, but that doesn't negate the fact that, like, he did create good heroes for a girl to look up to. Does that make sense?
I don't know. No, it's really complicated because, okay, this reminds me of like 10 things at the same time, right? One of them is Louis C.K., where like a lot of his material is really good because we're operating on the assumption that he's a good guy and that he didn't actually assault anyone. Because he's talking about how he like wants to but wouldn't, and you go, well, sure, that's a really complicated thing to talk about.
Or the daughter stuff where he talks about like his how his daughters are assholes and whatever, and it's like
or like Aaron Berg having a fucking segment called Rape of the Day or fucking Faggot ISIS or whatever. On a level I could fucking think could that was pretty funny it given the right context, but you destroy that context when I find out that you're actually like horrible.
Actually raping and horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. Or that you're promoting or like you're actually harassing like people that fucking didn't consent to this sort of stuff. Because comedy only works like that when there's consent. When it's not consenting, you're actually just harassing.
So that's why I bring up Buffy, because I feel like with the Buffy situation, I understand how comedy fans feel. In that I think that ultimately the message that Joss Whedon was sending with creating something like Buffy is positive, but then it gets tainted by what he was and how he behaved in real life towards the people who created Buffy, right? And I think these like comedy fans are in this situation where they're like, I like this person, they're funny, the things they do are funny, but they can't acknowledge that the things they did while making that funny content was bad. You know, like,
yeah,
we can't separate the content they created that spoke to our hearts from the behavior that they exposed while creating that.
You know what this also reminds me of is pretty fucking weird. Did you hear about this thing that happened with Armie Hammer?
What was the thing with him that he liked getting, like, it was like,
it's he's really,
a sub? What's the thing with him?
No, it's weird. It's a weird one. There's, like, layers to it. Armie Hammer, by the way, is, like, from the Army. This is just a side thing. He's from the Arm and Hammer dynasty, like the baking soda.
Really?
Yeah, his name is Arm and Hammer. He was named after the company. The company was not named after him. It was like that way around. It's so whatever. This is a weird person we're talking about, right? But unrelated, really.
I had no idea. I honestly had no idea that the name actually was related to that
shit. It's so weird. But what happened is somebody leaked some texts that some sects rather that like gave away or leaked that he has a cannibalism fetish, which is a pretty taboo fetish. And I think,
but is it just like fantasy?
That's
like
the
like
thing.
The New York cop,
like the cop, right?
Yeah.
And like, this is complicated, you know. I kind of could see both sides of this, but a lot of people were like, oh, this guy's a serial killer, you should be thrown in jail, like with that cop. And a lot of other people were going,
they're potential serial killers.
Yeah, sure. I don't know, but like,
but then, it's like thought police. Are you gonna fucking arrest people for what you think they will do in the future?
Then
you can't do that.
So like Teen Vogue or one of those really woke magazines wrote like, here's the world of cannibal fetishists, here's how they do it without fucking being immoral. They just jack off to weird porn or whatever. So there's that. But anyway, all this happened, and the controversy of the day for a while was just like, wow, Armie Hammer, is he a cannibal? And then you know what happened? Turned out somebody else spoke up and went, the reason I leaked this is not because he's like, I give a shit that he has this fetish. It's because he's an abuser. Like, he's an abusive boyfriend. Yeah. And what happened is he was getting Me Too'd. And that happened, and then he reframed the whole thing as like, oh, these people are trying to kink shame me.
Just attack you, yeah.
Right, but like no one actually, that's not what it's about. It's about the fact that he like hit a woman or something like that. I don't know if that's what it was, specifically hitting, but like he was abusive on some level or whatever.
Yeah.
He was doing fucking PR, right? That's why I brought this up, right? Because it's like everything reframes itself through like this damage control thing.
Yeah.
With him, with like Berg, with like fucking this stand-up New York guy, with Joss Whedon or whatever. This tendency to like, I guess like shove it all off on like I don't know, I'm losing my train of thought here.
No, it makes sense. They're all shoving it off into, like, getting canceled. Like, there's, like, one boogeyman that is keeping them all from fucking expressing their truth. And it's like, no, sometimes some of you should not be talking anymore.
I guess in the large scheme of things, to try to, like, rhizome this out and go, how, you know, how, what do I mean by this? What is this, how does this relate to, like, this whole fucking healthcare situation and like the birth of psychiatry and advertising and all this stuff. I guess all of this sort of raises these interesting questions about like free will. Like you're saying with like Joss Whedon and the,
yeah,
you know, how much of him is, you know, do we like disconnect from his art and stuff like that? Look.
Do we just end this one on a...
Yeah,
the rhizome just keeps going. There is no conclusion. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
This is not tree logic, Jake. There is no conclusion. It is an ongoing fucking influence circle. And, yeah, like, I don't think there's any conclusion. As much as I've been thinking, like, I don't know. My intention was not to burn bridges everywhere, but it's also, like, I'm not trying to lie to keep things going. And so it isn't... there's no conclusion to be reached. It's just the next step in the next thing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's it. I mean, maybe the fucking, the like, the grifter move when considering any of this information is to go, hey, I've got the conclusion. That's writing the book, White Fragility, and then fucking selling it to people.
Yes, and being like, I have the answer for you.
Yeah.
And that's not the thing. Like, it's definitely not the thing I think we're trying to do with this podcast. I'm not trying to be like, here's the answer to anything. I'm trying to tell you, here's the questions that you should be asking. I'm okay with just ending on a fucking, we left you on all these questions. Figure it out, motherfucker. That was Lucy agreeing, see?
Oh, Lucy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to have to think about this more because I think I got all the way close to something and then I just, well, I don't know. You know how podcasting goes. I just kind of forgot. I'll listen back. I'll make notes.
Listen back. See if we have to do like an addendum. We can do that. We can totally do that. We control our fates. That's what's great about this forum.
Oh, we do control our fates, don't we?
Yeah, we can totally put out the next episode can just be a continuation about how you didn't say the right thing at this one.
That's what's so weird about like Adam Curtis is what he's doing with his documentaries is sort of describing this like this meta explanation of where we are at as people right now in this completely subjective reality that is like simultaneously he's honestly like Deleuze a lot where it's like simultaneously a lot of this is materialistic and a lot of this is psychological and is coming from within, but these two things are just kind of in conflict with each other, and if you think about that too hard, it'll like fry your brain. And basically we're the big $1 million question with trying to understand any of Adam Curtis's documentaries seems to be like, how do we get out of this present moment that we're like fucking stuck in or whatever? I don't know
the answer to that. I think, as a matter of fact, I would say that the answer is to revel in the present. Like, if anything, humans are really good at wallowing in the past and becoming obsessed with what's happening in the future. We're not really good at absorbing the present. You know, like the contradictions in the present that just like sit in it, man. Just sit in it. Just live in how it is contradictory to be who you are and think the things you think in the current moment. And that's all that I can say is like, because however you examine your present to be today, tomorrow it'll be different, right? So focus on the present.
Yeah. God. You know, you're right, though. It's just, it's so frustrating to, like, understand this. Because the last couple of weeks I've been watching this Harley Quinn show, and I've been like, man, this show is so funny, and yet I think it is thematically kind of, like, not great. Or you watch, like, you know, like that, the fucking Black Panthers movie, like the Fred Hampton movie, and you're like, you know, like, simultaneously a good story and like propaganda can't exist at the same time, and you're just sort of steeped in all these like contradictions and you just, it's like an unnerving place to live. I don't really know what to do with it.
I know. I think that's the maybe like the crux of modernity. We don't know what to do with it. We're just stuck in a position where we are experiencing something that I don't know that I can say generationally I'm the first to experience it, so maybe other people in my generations and after feel the same way. It is full of hubris to say I think I'm experiencing something new that was never experienced before, but it's also completely different to just live in the moment as opposed to projecting what it could mean for the future or the past, because that's what everybody before us did. So I'm going to end it on a Latour note and just say the actual meaning of modernity is to make sure that all of your decisions are based on your own desires and not what was given to you as an expectation of the past or a projection of what the future should be. Is it something you actually want to do? And it's not a perfect metric, but so far, I think it's like the only one that I can really back. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
it keeps you true in the present, you know, like, do you really want to sign up to this? And because, okay, so for example, Jake, I would say like every comic who decides that they don't want to rock the boat and they're going to sign off to the kind of shit that Danny says or that Patrick says or that Rebecca says or whatever the fuck, they're thinking future. They're thinking distant future. Where will I benefit from this relationship? What's going to happen with my career in the future when she decides she saw my thing and whatever, right? Then there is the past, which is for every comic, there is the pressure of what your parents expected you to be, how you are measuring up to that, whether or not you lived up to everything. So living in the present and actually measuring your choices by whether or not they satisfy you in the present is the modern thing to do, as opposed to being concerned with the distant future of your success, quote unquote, or the distant past of what your parents expected you to be.
Okay.
I'll clarify when I'm not drunk.
No, but I think you just described kind of like Harley Quinn's thing.
Yeah?
Kind of. I don't know.
I can see it being that, because I do think that that's Harley Quinn's thing, because if she was an overachiever who became a psychiatrist, that's her distant past pushing on her to be like a thing that she's supposed to be. And then her future is supposed to be like, keep publishing, keep being a good fucking psychiatrist, whatever the fuck you have to do to measure up and level up, right? So the present is acknowledge that you're in love with your psychotic patient and go with that. And honestly, is she wrong? I don't think so. I'm going to go ahead and say that me and Latour back Harley Quinn.
Okay. Now I'm thinking about like the Joker. It was a weird thing about the Joker.
I also backed the Joker. He was living his present life, man.
The only healthcare he has access to is like in the prison. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
The Joker movie was pretty good about that. It was like, this is like a product of like society and the way that it's set up. Yeah. All right. Well, my brain as far as it can go this week.
I know. And we're not going to do a Patreon episode. We'll get you guys next week.
Yeah, we'll do it like every week.
Write us an email. We do have a couple good ones that we can respond to, but we'll do it next week. Whyyoumadpod@gmail.com. That's all my plugs.
Pod Damn America, and I think that's it.